Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It is fantastic to have you here for another episode of the show. Now, have you ever had one of those days where you felt really busy but not quite so productive? Or have you had one of those days where perhaps you just felt like you've had sand in the gears and it's been a bit tough to get through? So today we're going to be talking about how to get rid of all of that stuff. We're going to be talking about how to win the day. Not just today though. We want to win the day today, tomorrow, and every day thereafter. And my guest today, James Whittaker, is an expert at helping people do that. James is a phenomenal guy. He was an Australian guy living in LA. He's the author of 3 books, which is a feat in and of itself. He's the host of a podcast called Win the Day, and he's spoken to over 200 of the world's most revered entrepreneurs, business icons, athletes, really in an attempt to unlock the secrets to their success. And some of his guests include JJ Virgin, Grant Cardone, Lewis Howes, and a whole lot more. Now, in our conversation, James and I spoke about a bunch of different things. We spoke about, well, firstly, we spoke about his backyard bar in LA, which is phenomenal. But moving beyond the bar and the talk of kegs, we spoke a lot about individual rhythms. We spoke about how to tap into your own biotype, how to tap into your own natural rhythm to get the best out of yourself rather than conforming to someone else's version of habits or sleep or other things like that. We talk a lot about resilience. We spoke a lot about, you know, how to bounce back from adversity, which of course is a really important thing if you're going to achieve anything in life, because if you're going to achieve anything, you're going to have setbacks, you're going to have adversity. That's just the nature of achievement. So whoever is able to bounce back from that adversity are the ones that go on to achieve greatly. It is a key determinant for success. So we spoke about that and a whole heap more. Now, this was a really fun episode to record. It's a great conversation. I enjoyed talking to James a great deal. And as I often say, you're going to want to have a pen and paper handy because there are some genuine pearls of wisdom, some absolute nuggets of gold that you're going to want to take down and absolutely implement into your life for great success. So I hope you enjoy this podcast as much as I enjoyed recording it. Please do head across to Apple or to Google and give us a review on the podcast. We'd love getting those. So if you've enjoyed this episode, please do leave us a review. We'd love to get that from you. But in the meantime, here's James Whittaker. James Whittaker, welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It's wonderful to have you here. Thanks for taking the time, mate. How are you doing?
I'm great, thanks, Jesse. Thanks so much for having me on. How are you doing?
Really well, mate. Really well indeed. And you're coming to us all the way from LA, an Aussie expat in America. How's that going?
It's going great. It's funny, I was actually just involved in a TV show that airs in a few weeks where they turn a part of your backyard into a bar. So they just converted our garage into an Aussie-style bar. I'm not kidding. There's a six-foot kangaroo. There's the head of a great white shark that has a beer tap in it as well. So, and there's a giant Australian flag on the outside of the garage now. So I'm more Aussie than ever despite being based in the US.
Well, I tell you, do you get to keep that or do they disassemble it? Is that yours forever?
No, they keep it there. Yeah, it's been fantastic. So now there's just a keg. Whenever the keg runs out, we just got to go and replace it. Like, I never in a million years thought that I would have a keg sitting in the backyard in the garage with this giant Australian flag. And I thought when we got our first keg that it would last about 2 or 3 months. And I was worried whether or not we would actually get through it. And we had a few social gatherings, maybe to make up for everything that was happening in COVID. And we got through the keg in less than 72 hours. So now I'm very close friends with the good people at kingkeg.com.
Very good. Well, I'm sure there'll be a PB to try and beat somewhere in there for you, mate. I guess the other thing too, I've got this vision in my mind of like the tour buses rolling through LA and go, yep, that's the Australian house right there. And all the Australians kind of disembarking and coming in for a beer. So that sounds great. Well,
they had to, when we were doing the filming, they actually had to do a letterbox drop for a pretty big perimeter around the house. And there were people who were like, oh my God, you're going to be doing filming here. Can you tell us more about it? So there were people who were legitimately starstruck to talk to me when I was like in the front yard, knowing that this TV show is going to be filmed there. So it was a very just hilarious experience to be involved in. It's certainly a different side of me than what people have seen from just the work I do with my business and podcasts and everything else.
So the Australian is boardies and pluggers being the national TV celebrity, I think is fantastic.
Exactly. There are some very, very funny moments in the show. It's called Backyard Bar Wars. There's some very funny moments in this show for people to check out. It'll be very good fun.
All right. We'll definitely check that out. But let's talk a bit about your work. And obviously, your work is taking you around the world and you've landed in the US. I'm curious to ask you a little bit about that journey because it's not a common journey necessarily for people to find themselves working and living in the United States. I'm curious, how did you find your way over there in the first place? What took you there?
So my dream had always been to go and do an MBA in the US. And a lot of people, they want to go over to the UK. But for me, it was all about the US. I just feel like it's more exciting over here. I think just culturally, it just appealed to me a little bit more. And I certainly had a lot of people who went and did the UK thing and had a great time. So the MBA that I enrolled in was 9 months in Boston, which is about as far away from Brisbane as you can get. Brisbane is where I grew up. And it was 9 months in Boston and 3 months in Shanghai in China. That was in 2012. It was an amazing experience because the university that I was in, they enabled you to do two semesters where you could rotate campuses. So they had campuses all over the world, but where I spent most of my time was Boston. And then after that, for the end of it, was in Shanghai in China. And then I reached that point where I thought I wanted to be a consultant at the end of that MBA. I had these big visions and a very clear direction of what I wanted to do. And a funny thing happened during that MBA program, as happens for many people. It's like you get thrown in this washing machine and it just spits you out in a completely different direction. And that was the entrepreneurial journey that I started on. And shortly after, I met my now wife and have been in LA ever since.
Wow, that's fantastic. And look, one of the things I've noticed about the American culture as well, and again, I'd love to ask you to speak to this, is the Americans think in a different level, different scale. And the times I've been to the United States, I've always been stretched and my thinking has grown just by hanging around people because they seem to think really big. Is that your experience as well?
Some of the things, particularly in LA, where it's very big for entertainment, like even just being involved in this TV show, which was such a recent thing, seeing the amount of money and resources that were involved just in this TV production for a network that isn't known as being like it's a network called True TV, which is a legit network, but it's not like it's one of the biggest ones. There must have been 70 people here, 70 in my house just for one of these filming. So many cameras and just things involved in this. And I've got some other good friends who are from Brisbane, again, where I grew up, who are doing some big things over here in TV production. And the scale of this, it's just massive. And I think it's difficult for people who come to a place like America to go back to Australia where quality of life is probably the best in the world. But there will always be a component of excitement and that grandiose feelings that you get in America. So what I wanted to do was to really test myself I wanted to be a very, very small fish in just the biggest pond in the world. And LA in particular, people come to LA to follow their dreams. They come here to pursue it, whether it's in entrepreneurship, whether it's in arts or entertainment. So it's a very supportive culture. Whereas in my experience with Australia, coming out of high school, it was very much that people are happy to see you doing well on the condition that you're not doing that much better than they are. A lot of that tall poppy syndrome. I know it's getting a bit better now, but that was just something that I just really just, it's not great for mental health if you're an entrepreneur to be involved in that environment. So I just found a lot of people in America who had that alignment of vision and impact and influence. And I've been able to establish relationships with some really great companies that are doing some big things that have helped my message on a much bigger scale. Companies like Success Magazine, who represent me they're my speakers bureau, Success Magazine, and so many other. The Napoleon Hill Foundation is another association that I do a lot of work with. So there's a lot of big opportunity over here that just, it really just gives me a lot of energy day to day.
That's fantastic. And you've given me a couple of really lovely introductory threads to pull on for our conversation. And I know you're a podcaster yourself. You've got a wonderful podcast, Win the Day, and you've interviewed some incredible guests as well. But as a podcaster, thank you for those lovely segues you've given me because I'm going to grab one of those and go with it.
No problem.
You've spoken about Napoleon Hill, and most of us would be familiar with Think and Grow Rich and the book itself. Tell us a little bit about the work you're doing there and what I'm curious to understand is the modern take of Napoleon Hill's work. I've read the book many, many times. I think it's a great book. for me, if I was to make a comment about it, the original text is probably not the easiest read, to be honest with you. So I'm curious to understand about the modern take of Napoleon Hill's work, because it is timeless, but how have you interpreted it for today?
Yeah, I'm happy you mentioned that, because a lot of people, they think about Think and Grow Rich. They've heard the power and the results it's been able to create for people. They say it's created more millionaires than any other resource in history, and certainly some of the most accomplished entrepreneurs and billionaires and people who I've grateful enough to have been interviewed. That is the book that really changed everything for them. But people hear that and they go and pick up this book, and if they don't know how to read it, or they're expecting it to be something like the newspaper, then they're just never going to get through it. So it is a challenging read, and you don't read it like you would a novel. There are two principles from Think and Grow Rich, which is the book that actually changed my dad's life when he was in his early 30s. It gave him a lot of direction when he had first read it. He made two vows to himself. The first one, that he would start his own business. I think it was within 90 days. And the second one was that he would spend the rest of his life promulgating the Napoleon Hill success principles, which he has done. And so I was always aware of its power, but it was a bit like that when the student is ready, the master will appear. And that is when I was reading it in my early 20s. I was like, wow, this is a very, very powerful book. But two principles in particular. The first one, desire. The starting point of all achievement is desire. If you don't know what you want, how can you possibly end up there? That really stood out to me. But the one more than anything else is the power of the mastermind, which is basically that you don't need to have all the answers yourself. You can surround yourself by other people who have attributes and skills and connections and resources that you don't have, to be able to bring them into your mission. And relationships, they really have changed everything for me. I just can't talk about that enough, that doing the right thing by people and giving without the expectation of anything in return and getting out of your comfort zone, they're all really important characteristics to leverage that power of relationships and regularly keeping in touch with people. So what I really wanted to do with Think and Grow Rich, The Legacy, which is the name of the book that I created, which came out in conjunction with the Napoleon Hill Foundation, was not to be a substitute for the original book. That was very, very important. It could never take the place of a book that sold more than 120 million copies and is just such a timeless icon. So what I wanted to do was to create a modern companion. And the very first thing I wanted to do was that goes right back to what you mentioned at the start, where I didn't want anyone to feel stupid for reading the book. If this was going to be their introduction to personal development, it needed to be something that they could easily absorb irrespective of their age. So it's really a collection of short stories. So it starts off each chapter. There's 13 principles of Think and Grow Rich, and each chapter introduces that principle in a modern context, referencing people like the Navy SEALs and Mark Zuckerberg and Sarah Blakely and Oprah Winfrey and Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos and all of those successful leaders. And then the rest of the chapter will be two short stories of people who I interviewed firsthand who were able to personify that principle. That's people like Bob Proctor, who was in the movie The Secret, or people like Barbara Corcoran, who's one of the people on the TV show Shark Tank in America, and Rob Dyrdek, who was a skateboarder who has become an amazing business mogul through, I think he's got like 8 television shows and all of the sustained success that he's been able to create. So that was what I was trying to do, was just create a modern companion to the best-selling self-help book of all time. And it's been very well received, which I'm grateful for.
Yeah, well, it's a cracking read. And I'd encourage everyone to grab a copy of your book as well as the original text and to really go through them, because like you've said, that book has changed so many lives. And interesting, you mentioned your father, and your dad is Noel Whittaker, who many people in Australia would be familiar with as a really astute financial commentator, very well-known author of countless books. I don't even know how many, but
23, tons. I think it is. Yeah.
Yeah, like huge. I think he was probably one of the first real financial writers of his time. And I remember as a teenager, my dad gave me Making Money Made Simple way back in the when. And I also was talking to you off air. I had the book, Getting It Together, which you and your dad turned into The Beginner's Guide to Wealth, which again is a fabulous book. But I wanted to just come back to Napoleon Hill for a second, because you spoke about the two key principles that really affected and impacted you, desire and mastermind. And I want to tap into desire for a second, because you're quite right. The basis of all achievement is knowing what you want. And it sounds so simple. You would think, how hard could it be to know what you want? But Napoleon Hill talks about burning desire that kind of continually drives you forward and is clear in your mind. And yet, in the work that I do, and I'm sure the work that you do as well, sometimes it's not always easy to pinpoint that desire. Is that a common thing? And if it is common, how do we uncover it? How do we unpeel that onion to get to the core of what's really important to us?
Yeah, great question. Now, I've had conversations with some of the most successful people who ever lived, and they have, even if they've had enormous financial success, they reach a point in their lives where they just feel like they're treading water, that they're not moving forward, that they're not living with purpose. Now, in every one of those instances, it's because of two things. They're not clear on who they are, and they're not clear on where they want to go. So the first thing that we do, or that I do when I work with those people one-on-one, or even in group settings, on stage, whatever it might be, is tying into that who you are piece. So we go through your values. Mm-hmm. We figure out exactly who it is that you are and what values you need to live in alignment with. And that helps you get clear on what things, not just to say yes to and the things that you need to initiate, it also helps you get clear on what things you can start saying no to if it doesn't align with those values. And the second thing there is where you want to go. So I have a success plan template. It's a free resource. It's just an Excel file. It's totally malleable. People can go and do whatever they want to do to edit the different fields there. And it's got a whole bunch of different categories in there of what you want out of personal success, out of financial success, travel, experiences, professional, all of these different things. And what you do is you figure out exactly what it is that you want in a list, and then you put them there in the categories, and then you basically reverse engineer that to figure out what actions that you need to take in the next 90 days that's going to get there, and you systemize that. And that might seem a bit crazy for people, a bit hard to follow rather for people who are listening to this. But if you go and download a copy of that, you'll see the second tab there. It's pretty comprehensive the way that it's detailed. And it's worked with people, I think, now in more than 20 countries to get them some really great results. And if you can implement that into your calendar and really systemize it, I think it's one of the most effective goal setting systems available. It's the one that I use constantly. And I redo those goals, that success plan, every single year. And I check in with those goals at a minimum of every 90 days to find out if I'm on track. And if you start doing those things, so many things open up for you. And in addition to that, probably the most important thing to do to get that desire is to raise your idea of what's possible by getting in a environment that's going to raise your beliefs of what's possible. If you're just hanging around the same people and there's that familiarity there, and a lot of people have heard that expression that familiarity breeds contempt. Well, familiarity also creates a cap, a ceiling on what you'll believe you're capable of. If you're around an amazing bunch of high achievers that are diverse, they come from a bunch of different backgrounds and they're doing some amazing things in the world, and you can have regular correspondence with them and help them achieve their things and they can help you achieve your things, then what you believe you're capable of completely goes through the roof. And then you've got to figure out what you can do to implement that into those goals. And then you live alignment with those values and those goals. And if you do that time and time again, what I have seen is that people are not only happier, not only more productive, but they earn so much more money than what they were earning previously. They're having so much more impact than what they were having previously. They got so much more influence and began to get recognized as authorities in their respective fields, because a funny thing happens there. Opportunities, you don't have to start creating them. Opportunities find their way to you. And that is one of the biggest turning points that you have in your life, when you realize through all of the actions that you've taken over time that opportunities, like a waterfall, like a flood, start coming their way to you. And all you need to do is say yes or no to those opportunities based on whether they're in alignment with your values and where you want to go.
Cool. So just really quickly before we do move on, if people did want to download that resource, where would be the best place for them to go to get that? Because I know there'll be people going, where is that resource?
Yeah, you can go to my Instagram, which is James Witt with two T's, JamesWhitt. And I've got a link in my bio on that Instagram account. So it's jameswitt.com/gotime, I believe is the link. But just go to the link in my bio on Instagram, click on that, and you'll see a link there to download the success plan template. It might also be available, if my memory serves me correctly, at jameswitt.com/VIP. James Witt, again with two T's, .com/VIP.
Cool. So you've spoken about a lot of things there around values and being clear about who you are and what you want. And it's really interesting. This reminds me of a conversation I had with one of my clients just recently. And he'd been working with us for a little while now, maybe a year or two. And he'd started to earn significant money. Well, not started. He has been earning significant money. He's earning now, taking home seven figures. He's doing really well. And he's 35, right? And he's kind of going, oh, I'm 35. I'm making $1 million a year. You know, this is great.
Yeah, life's good. Happy days.
Happy days. It's awesome, right? And of course, he's done really well. He's kind of trebled his take home and all the rest of it. But the question he asked me was, this is great, Jesse. And I could buy any material thing I want. Really, I could have a fast car, fancy house, whatever, whatever. And yet I'm craving something more. And we had that conversation around trying to figure out who he is and what he wants from life. But it was a hard conversation in the sense of, not hard to have because he's a really nice guy, but it was one of those conversations that required a lot of thought, a lot of reflection. So is there a reflective process in this as well? I mean, because I know the spreadsheets can be really helpful and it's going to help guide the thinking, but what's the inner work that needs to go into that along with that resource?
Again, a really, really good question. So one of the best things to do to really make sure that you can start to build that good foundation of integrity and not get carried away with wanting to take your money out for a test drive, which I totally get, is to go and help people, be of service to others. And I know that that might seem a little crazy to really help yourself is to go and help others. There was a moment where I was volunteering at a surf camp that was teaching military veterans that were coming back from the Middle East who had got PTSD and injuries and a whole bunch of other challenges. And you get in the water with them. They were using ocean therapy, teaching people how to surf. And I had a moment there, I'll never forget it, driving down the PCH, the Pacific Coast Highway, where I said to my friend, it's almost selfish helping other people because of how good it makes you feel. And it keeps you grounded when you do that. So I think if you're always focused on how you can be of service to others and be increasingly of value to others, it's a great way to have that foundation. That's one thing that I think is important. Another thing is I just use the Notes app on my iPhone. Anytime I think of an idea of something I might want to do or an experience I might want to have, I write that down. And then when I do that success plan routine, I bring it in there because I've already got that list ready to go rather than force it. And then the final thing is goes back to your daily routine. So for me, as you mentioned, all the work that I do for the most part is around the win the day branding. So I have the My Intent bracelet on my wrist that says win the day. And when I wake up in the morning, and to be honest, I don't want to get out of bed when I wake up in the morning. A lot of people are surprised to hear that. I talk so much about motivation and inspiration, but beds are just so comfortable. It's rare that I've had the feeling of waking up and I'm like, wow, I can't wait to leave my super comfortable bed. Who would want to do that? So I look down at my My Intent bracelet and I just really just take a moment to reflect on that win the day thing that's written there. I do this every single day. And that is an acknowledgement for me that the day, this day, every day is there to be won. Doesn't matter what happened yesterday or how crappy yesterday was. It doesn't matter what I'm going to do tomorrow. What matters is that I'm going to turn up today to make the most out of this day. I'm going to win this day. And then I put myself in the face of some type of adversity, because as people start earning more, they're going to be getting more of those comfortable things and really not necessarily trappings of wealth, but life is a lot more comfortable. So that's where I have a 5-minute cold shower, which is just a great way of having that adversity. You don't want to hop in a cold shower, but for me, recognizing that the day is there to be won, facing some type of adversity to really prove that I'm turning up to win this day, and then thinking about what 3 things that I'm going to do that are going to make today a win, because you can't win the day if you don't know what winning looks like. Those 3 things are everything to me to set the foundation to win the day.
Love that. And again, I'm really glad to have started this conversation about winning the day, because yeah, firstly, I just want to say, I thought I was the only person that liked my bed a lot too, because I love my bed. And in Canberra in wintertime, I love it even more. I can tell you it's lovely and warm and snuggly. But it is really interesting. Actually, let me just stick on this point for a second, because if you read lots of books, you know, people talking about, and again, I mean this to not be disparaging to anyone, but you know, you hear about the 5 a.m. club and you've got to kind of bounce out of bed and feel $1 million and go get them tiger kind of routine. And sometimes people can feel it less than adequate if they're kind of thinking, but I don't feel like that. I don't get out of bed and want to tear the world apart. I don't get out of bed and immediately slip into my joggers and, you know, run a half marathon and come back and drink my kale smoothie and go from there. So can we just talk about the realism around that for a second? Because I just want to bust a myth or two around this.
Huge. Now, there are people, I have many friends of mine that wake up at 3:55 a.m. or 4 a.m. or in the 5 a.m. club or 4:50, whatever club that you're in. And if that works for you, that is amazing. And I've tried that several times in my life to have that phase of, I've never done any earlier than 5 on a regular basis, but I did try 5 a.m. for a while and it was okay at the time, but I just naturally started moving back a bit later. And I interviewed a guy who's become a very close friend of mine, a guy called Dr. Michael Bruce, who I introduced through coming on my, who I was first connected with when he came on my podcast. And he's been on the Dr. Oz show, I think, 40 times. He's the world's foremost authority on sleep for high performance. He works with a whole bunch of CEOs and entertainers and people like that who really want to get the most like optimal production from a minimal amount of sleep. And he said there are four different chronotypes. So for people, if you're not of the chronotype who should be waking up early, you're not, you shouldn't be doing those things. So there's, it's just, it's bad advice to say that every single person should be waking up at 5 a.m. It's just wrong. It's completely false. What matters is your daily output. So my routine when I wake up and to really extend the process of what I mentioned before, after that, I'll go and grab a coffee and I'll sit in the sunshine in the backyard and I'll do a bit of journaling on my phone. Like I'm not trying to really get after it first thing in the morning. I'm trying to set myself up for calm and knowing what I will do. It all comes down to that daily output. If you wake up at 5 p.m. and you have daily output that surpasses or matches someone else who gets up at 3 a.m., then that's amazing. So I'm really happy you brought that up. And I don't agree in my experience. It's just, yeah, you need to do, and there's even a quiz that he has. It's called the Power of When Sleep Quiz to find out what chronotype you are and when you should be doing certain things throughout the day. And once you get dialed into knowing what your chronotype is, you just got to stick to that schedule with consistency. And if you can have that consistency, the amount of sleep that you need actually reduces. So it means that you end up with more hours in the day anyway, rather than trying to peel yourself out of bed at 5 a.m. for something that completely goes against your DNA.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure it goes against my DNA too, because I've given it a red hot go several times. And I think I'm just a grumpy bastard at that hour of the day, to be honest with you. And so I think
my family and the sleep doctor as well. So the three of us are in the same boat. Exactly.
I think my wife's grateful for when I get a bit more sleep, and my kids as well, all that sort of stuff. So I wanted to just talk a bit about habits, because you've spoken about the habits that you've got in your day. And I wanted to talk about habits as, obviously, we're all aware that good habits equal good outcomes and so on and so forth. So again, I think we can all appreciate that. One of the things that I find with habits is sometimes it is, you might have slipped into a bad habit. Sometimes you want to introduce a new habit, and that can be a little bit challenging from time to time. So I wanted to ask you a little bit around, how many habits can we habit ourselves to death and give ourselves a list of, 35 habits that we want to try and get through every single day, and again, become regimented in our habits. How do we know enough habits to give ourselves, we're going to do a couple of key things that we know move the needle, but we're also going to give ourselves a little bit of breathing space to just kind of go through an unstructured day without feeling like it's 9:57, now's the time for my 3 push-ups, and then at 10:02, I'm going to go and do my 20 burpees or whatever it is. What is it that is the right amount of habits, if there is a right amount, and how do we make sure we're not kind of overdoing it?
Well, I think there are just different phases of life. So I have a 2-year-old daughter. Anyone who's a parent knows, especially with young kids, when you go to bed, you've got no idea what time you're going to wake up. It might be multiple times in the middle of the night. We have some good friends of ours whose child crawls into bed with them literally 100% of the time between the hours of 2 a.m. and 5 a.m. So they go to bed not knowing what time their kid is going to be in their own bed or how they feel the next day. And that can be tough. So recognizing that there are different seasons, there are different phases of life where maybe you're in a phase where parenting is the big focus, where you just want to be present with the family. And one of the things that might fall by the wayside there are things like your physical health. You might have less time. You might not have an hour to go to the gym or whatever fitness thing that you do to get that done. But maybe 3 months in or 6 months in, you can start introducing things, because you remind yourself that the longer you wait, the harder it is going to be to re-kickstart that activity once again. So I think it's important to recognize that. But just as routine is important, it can also be really, really bad, because it creates that lack of excitement where everything just seems uniform and so boring. So some of the little things, I know Tim Ferriss, he's spoken about things like making sure that you drive a different route every now and then, little things like that. Or something that I actually try and do is when I'm doing things like putting my pants on, is just using a different leg first of all to do that. Like, what little things can you do if you maintain a consistent routine where things like going to bed and waking up, like it's proven that that's usually a pretty good thing that you want to keep as far as routine. But making sure you still have a lot of creativity and free thought and getting out of your comfort zone is very, very important. Something that I have in my calendar, I actually block out. I just have it no appointments, where I do that very, very regularly if I just want to make sure I'm just not overwhelmed and I want to have that balance of being able to get that done. So having an alignment of what success looks like to you in all areas might mean where now I just recently started doing a new fitness thing where I'm actually scheduling that in my calendar weeks out. So it's done. Nothing else can go in there. Where previously, if I didn't do that, it's so easy for a meeting to get stacked in there. So just being really intentional about that, but also not putting too much pressure on yourself, knowing that there's just different seasons and different phases of life, and you need to turn up and do what's best for you.
Yeah, I'm loving that. And I think that's the thing is, what I really appreciate about this whole conversation is it's about not having a one-size-fits-all definition of anything. Yeah, there's not a 5 a.m. club, there's not a 3 a.m. club, there's not a 7 a.m. club or whatever. But there's no set habits that are success habits. It's the ones that are helpful for you. And again, it's about, as you say, recognizing the season of life that you're in and kind of just being a little gentle with yourself and giving yourself permission to be okay with that, where you're at that time. And I think that's really good. I wanted to talk about the subject of resilience because obviously we're recording this during COVID extension, COVID, it's like COVID season two. It's like a pilot program that's kept on going when we really don't want to see another season of it.
It's like a 10 season show, isn't it? Yeah, just keep going.
Yeah, especially if you're in Victoria, they're well and truly over it. But I wanted to talk a little bit about resilience because going through life, there's always going to be setbacks. And obviously we're talking about COVID just as an example of needing to be able to bounce back and go through things and be flexible and go with the flow to an extent. But life doesn't always pan out exactly. We've all had failures. I've had some spectacular failures in my life, and some of them have really bruised me. Others have been less impactful. But I wanted to talk a little bit about resilience and the ability to bounce back, because I think if we're going to try and achieve anything in life, there are going to be times where it doesn't work out as planned. And the ability to cope with that is going to be, I believe, one of the key determinants to those that go on and achieve things. Could you just have a bit of a yarn about that for a sec, please, mate?
Yeah, well, one of the big things that I talk about in my book and on my Win the Day podcast is that how you respond to adversity when it inevitably strikes is what separates ordinary people from extraordinary achievers. And if you can get into the habit, talking about habits like we did before, asking yourself, what's the gift in this when you're faced with that failure and that adversity? There's a gift in all of this stuff. So asking yourself, what's the gift in this? And recognizing that there's always something that can be done. And even if that's just a moment where you've got to go and take like a day of self-care or whatever it might be to work on yourself, it's very, very important. And in an environment where everyone's wearing masks and people haven't got that physical connection, I haven't seen my family in Australia now for almost 2 years. And I have a daughter who's just over 2 years old who hasn't been a part of their lives, which is, it just seems crazy. So I think in addition to that, what's the gift in this and always recognizing that is to try and think about what is in our control versus out of our control. And it's very easy for us to want to blame other people and anything else and anyone else for the negative situations that we might find ourselves in. But when we do that, all we do is massively reduce our ability to do something about it. So that's where practicing that extreme ownership, we're saying literally everything in my life is my fault, which is something that I'm very, very big on. And what that does is it greatly empowers you to be able to change that, because the people who spend all their time complaining about what they don't have, literally that exact same amount of energy, you can change that. You can transmute that to create the very circumstances that you want in your life. So they're just a few things that I think are important for people to establish that resilience. I've interviewed so many people now. There's people like Janine Shepherd, who's the very first story of Thinking Grow Rich, The Legacy, who's from Sydney, a very close friend of mine who had qualified for the Winter Olympics many years ago as a cross-country skier. And before she was even able to go to the Winter Olympics to compete, she was hit by a truck while she was on a bike ride in the Blue Mountains, where she spent airlifted to hospital, 10 days in a coma, 6 months in the spinal ward. And it's probably the best story I've ever heard, actually. It's an incredible journey of resilience. And that what's the gift in this question is something that she told me personally about, something that she was able to do to really manifest and create that resilience. And what she has been able to do ever since then is incredible. She's a TED speaker whose videos online have got, I think, almost 1 billion views through all the different clips. She's a multiple best-selling author. She's a walking paraplegic, which is crazy to even say. Like, for people who are so affected by that resilience, either spend too much time in their comfort zone or they have not expanded their idea of what's possible. We could, speaking of series and seasons, we could do a 10-part season based on just examples of resilience out there, where I know now it doesn't matter. Anything could happen in my entire life, and I feel I would be very well equipped to handle with it long term, based on just having firsthand conversations with these people who have been through just the most harrowing circumstances you could ever imagine.
That's really interesting, because obviously you've had lots of conversations with lots of people in your podcast and in other arenas as well. And I'm curious to ask you about, I believe as the podcast host, I always feel like I'm the luckiest person in the world, because I get to have really cool conversations with interesting people. I'm curious to ask you, from your podcast, from your conversations, what have you learned about yourself and what have you learned about life more broadly?
Really good question. So with that, it actually ties back to resilience. One of those things that I got from just interviewing all these people was this really great sense of empathy. There are people out there who are really, really, really struggling. And if they can get up and get after it, then you can too. There was one guy, Todd Love, who was a guy, I think he was either 18 or 19 years old, who was in Afghanistan. He basically woke up in a hospital in Germany and he felt down in the hospital bed where his legs were, to touch his legs, and he felt the hospital bed. And we actually included that in the Beginner's Guide to Wealth, that story. And the doctor came in and said, your arm is so badly crushed that we need to amputate it. This is a guy 18 or 19 years old who became a triple amputee, and he said he was actually grateful for that accident because it made him appreciate all of the people in his life for how loving and kind and compassionate they were with him. To have those stories, I mean, it really is incredible. So having that deep sense of empathy for all of that that's out there, I think it was a Robin Williams quote that you just never know what other people are going through, so be kind. Mm. It's recognizing that every single one of us is fighting an intensely personal, difficult battle, every single one of us. And so thinking about what we can do to be kind, what we can do to check in with other people, just to say, I do this with every email that I send pretty much at the end of it. It's always, as always, if there's anything I can do to help you, just let me know. Just sending audio messages with people just to check in to do that. So I think overall, it's just that really big sense of empathy and wanting to help people in their journey, because we're all connected. And the more that you, not that this is what you intend to do, but it's just a byproduct of what comes back, the more you're able to serve and be of value to others, the more you're going to get back naturally, because you can have a whole bunch of people who are desperate to help you.
I really love that message, mate. I think it's really good. And I think that the recognition that everyone is going through their own personal battle, that deeply personal battle that you spoke about, I think just one of the things that, to touch on that for a moment, is perhaps this is just a personal rant, and so this may or may not make the final cut, but we'll see. But one of the things I've noticed is, in a world that we live in today with social media and so on, it's really easy to throw stones, to cast blame, to do whatever. And I really like your point around that, because as easy and as tempting it might be to vent your spleen, to say something, to cast judgment when we're not in possession of the full facts, I think perhaps a little bit more reflection and a bit of circumspection and kindness would go a long way in that sphere.
So true. And also asking people, you don't want that confirmation bias. You want to be able to present to someone who you really trust, or your own personal board of advisors, to say to them, what am I missing? Mm-hmm. What am I missing? Don't tell me that something's good. Just tell me, like, what am I missing from this that I can make it better? People I know that come to me and say, look, I've done this post, or I've written this book. It's good, right? It's good, right? It's good, right? All they're doing is just trying to set it up for, yeah, it's good. But what have you learned? How can you possibly improve it? Like, there's no good that comes from that, ironically. But being able to really say to people, like, look, what can I do to improve this? Or what am I missing? Like, being very specific about filling in those gaps of awareness or knowledge is not just good to help you create a good outcome, but it also helps take away from some of that pressure, where if you feel like you are being attacked in some capacity, whether it's negative reviews on your business or comments on a social media post, it's just going to open up that two-way conversation, because we're always learning and we're all a work in progress.
Absolutely. The question, what am I missing, is really akin to what we ask in our boardroom program, so is what don't I see? And it's a really good question, because I remember Tiger Woods saying that at one point he had five coaches, and someone said, what on earth would you want five coaches for? And he says, because when I swing the club, I can't see myself. And I think that we all get caught up in our own stuff sometimes. We all get caught in our own head, in our own bubble. And having that external perspective that you've mentioned is really, really helpful.
I haven't heard that Tiger Woods reference. That's really powerful. That's great.
Yeah. You've been an incredible guest, mate, and I'm really grateful to you. It's been really fun to have a conversation with you. I wanted to just wrap up our conversation with a couple of key things or key questions. And I usually like to ask a question that goes something along the lines of, you know, if you could put a giant billboard up on the highway with a message from James Whittaker for all the passers-by as they're driving, whatever direction they're going, whether they're going north, whether they're going south, east, or west, right? What sort of guides, messages, signposts would you want on that billboard as people navigate their life?
The big one would be a quote that I put up at every single speech that I do, and it says, each day, if you do not make the decision to win, you have automatically made the decision to lose. Mm-hmm. Each day, if you do not make the decision to win, you've automatically made the decision to lose.
Love that. Mate, as I said, you've been a really generous guest. And ladies and gents, I'd encourage you to head across to jameswhit.com/go time, grab the goodies, head across to the Instagram account of James at James Whit. And in the bio there, you can download the spreadsheet he's been referring to around the success planner. Grab those resources because I know they'll make a tremendous difference in your life. And I know James will be on hand to support you if you need that as well. If people want to reach out to you directly, mate, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, you can do that through my website, jameswhit.com. You can message me on Instagram at jameswhit. Anything I can do to help any of you out there at all, please let me know. I'll do all I can.
Thanks, mate. You're a good man. Good to have you, pal. Thanks again.
Thank you so much, Jesse. Really appreciate you having me on.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/savvydentist.